I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello guys, joining you from the Borough Breakdown. Just a quick note from me before we start the podcast this week. 149 episodes now. We just want to say a massive, massive thank you to every single person who has listened to this podcast, engaged with us, following us, or whatever you do with this podcast. So I say thank you. I can't believe we're actually 149. We've got 150 next week. But I just want to ask for a small, small favour. And if you listen to us on Apple Podcasts or if you have an iPhone, I just want you to go and search for the Borough Breakdown on the podcast apps and give us a 5-star rating. We're on 142 podcast reviews worldwide. And look, if we can hit 150 before we hit 150 episodes, that would be absolutely amazing. It helps us get charted, help other Borough fans find us as an established Borough podcast. And then also, I just want to say thank you to everyone who's donated to our charity this year in the Motor Neurone Disease Association. We're on £900 now. I just want to say thank you. I can't believe we've raised so much already, and that money goes a long, long way in helping someone with MND. But that's enough from me. And in this podcast, we chatted about all of the survey answers that you submitted to us. Over 300 people submitted an answer to our questionnaire, and we broke all of it down, had some really good discussion points, and even had a laugh about Steve Bruce. So I really do enjoy it. So this is the Borough Breakdown podcast, and it's all you must share chatter. In a pod.
This Fleming is down the edge of the air. Fleming for that's Craig Hignett. Hit it, Higgy. Higgy hits the trap.
Ravinelli coming alive again. Janino wants the ball played to him. Ravinelli spots out. Emerson!
Hello and welcome to the Borough Breakdown podcast with Johnny, Dana and Tom. And in today's pod, we're doing something a little bit different. So that's in the last week, we created a questionnaire about Borough's start of the season to get a flavour of what the fans' thoughts and feelings are so far this season. So if you're one of the 300 people that answered it, thank you very much for answering it. So guys, let's break it down. But first, three words, guys. How are you feeling, Tom?
Enjoying the break.
Enjoying the break and dinner.
I couldn't possibly describe how I'm feeling in three words. I'll just say that what I said last week of I'm just really disappointed and disconnected, and I echo Tom's thoughts of enjoying the break. It's been a blessing that we can just sort of disengage for a little bit.
I want to go with three words, pina colada, please. Nice to have a little break. Felt a little bit weird being away from you both. I mean, like, you seem to do a little nice podcast as well without me, so...
Yeah, we had a good little night, didn't we? It ran a bit longer than we expected, but all in all, it was very good.
Got another three words for you. Where is Ito? You said you were bringing him back.
Yeah.
Well, I was in Torrevieja. I mean, I wasn't near Madrid, so...
For this, I'm not very happy.
Yeah, well, I did... try and look for him. I was walking in the streets with like a photo of like just Ito and like an A4 piece of paper.
Were you like Leo with the AK training top on, just hitting your chest, Charlton away?
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised Alison leave me, to be honest, just because of because that was a little bit weird. But I mean, I couldn't find him, guys. Sorry, but maybe it's one day we can actually bring him home. But let's break this questionnaire down then, because. It was a very, very interesting form that we kind of filled out and what people filled out for us. And the first question, Dana and Tom, was how are you feeling about Middlesbrough right now? And 78% of people were negative, with the words of disappointed, peed off, frustrated, disconnected, discontent and all that kind of stuff. 19% was a meh, it was like, okay, could be better. And then only 2.4% were positive. So Tom, starting off with the positives, are you surprised to see the figure so low? I mean, given it's so early in the season, appreciate form's not that great at the moment.
I'm surprised to see it's so high as 2.4%.
Really?
I don't think there's much at all to be positive about at the moment. I mean, especially not from our point of view, and as we said on the podcast last week, it was just like, it's just been kind of error after error. We're doing so badly. I just really can't think of anything to be positive about.
I mean, we're not in the relegation zone.
Yeah, but you know, we're kind of going to have to start relying on people getting FFP deductions around us soon. So,
I mean, two already got it. So, I mean, we're looking for one more, and we're going to be safe then, I guess. But we'll come down to the predictions a little bit later on, because there was a big shift in voters and how they thought it would be at the start of the season in comparison to now. But Dana, with the figures that we have, you know, 78% negative, 90% men, and a 2% were positive. With the figures we have, how can Middlesbrough as a club turn this tide over to make fans a little bit more positive than what they currently are?
Win games. That is really all there is to it, to be honest. Fans respond to results and winning football matches, and we're not doing that. So I can really only say winning games. I mean, you saw after the Sheffield United victory, the people that were Warnock out, myself included, gave Borough their due credit. And that's fantastic to be able to say, right, fair enough, this week we've got it right. But then, as we've mentioned before, it always just seems like one step forward, two steps back with Borough. And that's the most frustrating thing. We haven't picked up back-to-back wins since the end of last season in April, where we beat Rotherham and then Sheffield Wednesday. And that's really frustrating, because I think with this squad, this is probably the best squad that Neil Warnock has had at Borough. And we're not really showing how good it can be. So it's been really frustrating. And I think that mess section, a lot of people are... The apathy is setting, and that's really probably the worst feeling that you could have as a fan.
So apathy was the most correlated trended words of the responses in the meh section. Everything else like around like keywords in terms of like negative were stuff I probably can't really say on the podcast. So I mean, it is frustrating. I can see where people are coming from. But Dana, I'm just going to come back to a point you said there around taking one step forward, two steps back. So the best performance, which was voted by the fans, was Sheffield United with 69%. The worst performance was Reading and Hull with 30% and 18%. Respectively. So with that, given that the performance against Sheffield United was good, I thought we played really, really well in moments in that game, and I thought that, you know, Bamba was good. I thought Lee Pelletier was brilliant. I thought him and Bowler were the two important players on the pitch for us on that day. But Sheffield United, great result. Hull, absolutely awful. Is it fans kind of saying that, well, is it short-term memory from a fan perspective, or is it a case of fans have felt like they've had the stuff and knocked out of them because Sheffield, you know, it was so good and you're on a high, and then you're really brought down to reality with the whole game?
Yeah, I have a bone to pick with that. I don't even think that Hull was in the top three worst performances this season. I think Derby away was a far worse performance than Hull.
Okay.
First half at Hull, there was a real lack of quality, but the second half, I thought we were good. And as I mentioned last week, I think we were unlucky to lose, but I will reiterate that I still believe that we shouldn't have won that game and we weren't deserving of 3 points out of that game. But there might be a little bit of recency bias in that. I mean, frustrations are boiling over, of course, but for me, Reading absolutely is the worst performance, and I probably would follow that up with Derby's probably third. I would say maybe Blackpool.
So do you want me to break second. It down for you?
Yeah.
So the highest one was of course was Reading, and then we had Hull, then we had we had Coventry with 16%, and then Blackpool with 14%. And then we had QPR, and then we had a couple of fans say Nottingham Forest away, even though we won 2-0, was one of the poorest performances of the season.
Yeah, it wasn't great, was it? But to be fair, Forest were absolutely diabolical. They really did not have anything going for them in that game. So, yeah.
Well,
strange.
Yeah, it is interesting. I think when you look at Boro's performances this season, I think when you look at the shots on target per the games that we've lost, we've really struggled to create chances. We've been pretty much nullified. And then our long balls tend to increase the more we go behind. So it's interesting to see that. I think like teams are starting to just come in and be like, right, we'll score the if we score the first goal, if we just keep ourselves quite narrow and compact, they're just going to hoof the long ball into someone, and then they probably won't create the chance. And if they do create the chance, they might not take it anyway because our XG and everything, that's absolutely terrible, isn't it?
That's the thing with this style of play, is that when we get the opportunities, we have to take them. And it's interesting, actually. I was listening to a podcast with Jay Shetty about, funny enough, it was about knocking down doors and the opportunities. And he was saying that you can knock down God knows how many doors, eventually you're going to get there. But only if you keep doing that, if you keep knocking on the doors. I'm taking this into a footballing context. If you keep creating those chances, you're going to score. But with Boro, it does feel like, on the whole, with the squad that we've got, we don't create enough with it. I still don't think that creativity or even attacking is our biggest problem. I think it's rather defensively, where there's just holes aplenty in our midfield and in our backline. But for me, we need to start dominating games. We have the midfielders to do so. And maybe I'm in a world of delusion here and I'm acting really on belief rather than anything that I have actually seen in from our midfielders in a Boro shirt. But I do feel as though our midfield could be so much better. And it goes back to what I said last week about the style of play. I feel like we should be a team that dominates possession, that works through the midfield, and we're not. And it's really unfortunate to see.
So with that in mind then, obviously with the midfields and wanting to play more possession football, we'll come on to that towards, well, I think we have a couple of questions, yeah, time when we go into it, because it's an interesting perspective, because I have a feeling that fans really don't know what they want. I think it's based on, I mean, just win games, I think.
Yeah.
just win.
That's what it comes down to.
But Tom, why do you think Sheffield United was so successful then, and then Reading and Hull was unsuccessful?
Well, Sheffield United, I thought, was successful because we actually played on the floor, which I think we've been saying for weeks now that we just need to do that. And, you know, we'd brought Watmore back into the team, who was absolute revelation in that game. But our chances came from playing across the floor and not kind of hoofing it into the channels. I mean, fair enough, I think it was the first goal that came from a kick into the channel to Bowler. Fantastic first touch, and then we played it across the floor, got the goal from it. Reading didn't say that at all. Obviously, I think I mentioned this last week, from where I was sat in Reading, you could kind of see just really good view of the whole pitch and what exactly we were doing, just cutting out the midfield entirely. We were essentially waiting for Crooks to win knockdowns, and the centre mids were pushing up, as well as the balls into the channels, which just didn't work. Hull, I think that's kind of a different game to Reading, because we did create the chances at Hull. You know, if Sparrow had scored a couple of the one-on-ones he had, you know, we wouldn't even be talking about that as a bad performance. I think we were very unlucky at Hull, but Reading was a poor game. And it just comes down to the style of play, I think. When we played against Sheffield United, you could tell that it worked, but we just haven't been doing it consistently enough this season.
So would you say consistency is the key word?
I mean, consistency of playing it on the floor, but like I say, when we're kicking it into the channels, which we've seen quite a lot home and away this season, it's just not really being effective. We need a consistent style of play that's actually working.
Well, we'll come to the next question then, because it says, what do you think is the biggest reason for Boro's struggle so far this season? The majority answer was Neil Warnock, 42% of respondents saying the current boss can't turn it around, and he's the main reason for the defeats. That was followed up by tactics. So appreciate this was like a questionnaire where people would mention like certain keywords or like the manager, or so we had to like pull the data like through that, which was a nightmare. Thanks for that.
Sorry.
But followed by tactics. By you can tell I work in data analysis, can't you?
You can tell I don't.
24% was tactics, and then squad depth and quality was 16.7%. So if you really want to be very critical of that, you can kind of say, 42% is Warnock, And then you put 24% on top of that with tactics, because it's him and his coaching team that are creating this. So that can kind of fall under Warnock, but it's a... What can Neil Warnock do as a manager to change things around then? If it's him as a manager and it's tactical tweaks, what can he do as a coach to maybe change Borough's fortunes?
Incorporate the midfield more. I really believe in our midfield, and I think it can give a lot more than what it's giving at the moment. I know the typical Neil Warnock style of play is to get the ball up the pitch and play in the final third, but it does take out the midfield, and for me that is such a, that should be the centrepiece of this team. We've got some brilliant midfielders on paper now, ball carrying eights that can take us forward. Of course, you might sacrifice a little bit of defensive stability, but we don't really have that anyway in the setup that we have. So it's very, I guess, fan cliche to just say go for it. But I would say just let the midfielders express themselves, because, as I said, we do have some really exciting talent in midfield. And you can even put Paddy McNair in that category. I know I've been not necessarily critical per se, but I haven't really been convinced by Paddy McNair in midfield. But when we spoke to Robbie Stockdale, who of course coached him at Sunderland, he said that if you play him in midfield, you will get, he would guess double figures in goals. And then he plays there for Northern Ireland and he does well by all accounts. So we're yet to see that really at Borough, apart from there was a spell under Woodgate where he was good. And I remember writing a piece where I said that we're finally getting the box-to-box midfielder that we thought we were getting from Sunderland. So there's promise in that midfield. We're just not seeing it. And games like Reading, for example, where you've got Martin Piera there, who I think had about, it was barely double figures in touches. It's frustrating because he can be somebody that can create. He's got the physicality. His offensive duels are fantastic. His dribbling's fantastic. And he's got the physicality. He's got the creativity. Just give them an opportunity and give the midfield an opportunity in general.
So with that in mind, Tom, and with Neil Warnock's history as a manager, 40 years in coaching, Dana's saying they wants to, we want to utilise midfield a little bit more. Can you see Neil Warnock changing the way he manages and coaches and sets up his team now, or do you think he will do exactly the same thing he's done for the last 40 years?
No, I think he's probably going to do very similar to what he's done. I think his teams have always been direct. They've relied a lot on the wingers and getting it directly to the wingers. I think the way to get the best out of our team and our midfield particularly is to go with more of a possession based style of play, and it's just, I don't think it's going to happen under Warnock. I think he might kind of coach us to play on the floor a little bit more. You know, I think based on what you see in the videos of the training sessions from Borough, like, we're always playing it across the floor. We play some good stuff, and then it comes to the match day, and then we're just like, right, into the flanks. That's clearly what's needed. I'm sure he can probably see that. I'm sure in all his years of experience, he can probably see that, and he's going to want us to play on the floor a bit more. But we're going to have a certain style of play to get it to the wingers and create chances that way. So I think that's the bit that's going to stick.
It's interesting you mentioned that, sorry, Johnny, that about the wingers, because we don't really play with, apart from when we've had Isaiah Jones in the team, our wingers aren't traditional. It's catchy, to be fair. But they're not like the traditional wings where they go on the outside. We've got Duncan Watmore cutting in. You've got Marcus Tavernier cutting in. So you're taking away a big part of the Neil Warnock style of play. That's why, I mean, his at Cardiff, the long balls and the channels were towards those wingers and let them have it and then let us let them play. And we don't really have that, do we? Because we've got wingers that want to cut in, that want to be in those sort of half spaces, the central areas. And I was thinking the other day, when you look at Marcus Tavernier's like defensive statistics, it might be worth putting him in midfield. I know that it's kind of, I don't know whether that would translate very well, just based off stats.
Just to interject there, Dana, but I was going to say there, for me, I don't think Tav should be. I've said previously around centre midfield, and I think he will move into a box-to-box midfielder. Mm. I think right now, given his age, I think Marcus Tavernier needs as much time and space on the ball to improve his decision-making to make him a top-level midfielder.
I suppose it is difficult as well when you're in the middle because you've got that pressure on you almost, whereas as you said, you've got space
that wide. It's time, you've got space, you're sometimes one-on-one with the defender, so it can improve different parts of his game. And I think when we spoke about Tav previously around him as a player and in terms of he's played so many different positions, every position that he's played is going to add at some point to his game to make him a more well-rounded footballer. Now appreciate I think he's only
22.
Yeah. I mean, look, if he's lucky, he's got another 14 games.
He's on that given his injury record,
I mean, he's got 14 years to really develop as a really, really good footballer. And he can probably maybe get to the Premier League. I think he will. I think he'll definitely get to the Premier League.
I do as well, yeah.
I think
100%.
If I was Tav now, I'd be going to New York, like, look, I have this great record in terms of, like, ball retention, duels and
tackling
etc. Sounds great. If you want to put him in centre midfield, great, you can do it. He might flourish, but it'll take him a while to adjust to it. But if he's on the right-hand side, you know, get on his left peg, you know, creating chances, getting Sparrow in behind. I think he's perfect for that position at the moment, and then he probably will move, probably to a bigger club than what we are, and someone's more financially.
Burnley.
Well, I mean,
be ruined.
No disrespect at the moment. If I was a footballer, I'd rather play for Burnley than Middlesbrough, just because of
consistent Premier League
football, more money going into it. Look at Newcastle this week, you know, with the takeover they've had, you're going to be playing against the best. So it doesn't really matter who you play for in the Premier League. Like, you're going to be getting the wages. You're not going to be getting relegated. Well, they could potentially this year. But, I mean, I would rather play for Burnley than the Middlesbrough at the moment. It doesn't matter what your stadium size or what your fan base is like. End of the day, like, you're playing at the top level.
Yeah, if you're playing in the Premier League, that's what it's all about, isn't it? Yeah. It's moving up a level. But I completely agree with you there about the... as well as moving into midfield is a different perspective on the game, isn't it? Because you've got... It's a different angle, I suppose, than when you're out wide. And Tav is dangerous when he's cutting in onto his left foot. He's had a few opportunities of shots on goal from there. It's just with Tav, when it gets to that split second where he needs that composure, he just loses it. And I think we saw that at Fulham where he had, I think, two opportunities right at the end of the game to win it for us, and he absolutely skied one of the shots over the crossbar. And that's probably what epitomises Tav, is that everything other than the sort of goals and assist tallies, he's fantastic, but he does need to add the goals and assists.
Work in progress, you know, like Isaiah Jones, Mark Bowler, to probably throw Dyke Steele and Dale Fry into there as well. These young players, they need so much time and patience because they don't really fulfil the potential to what they're 29, 30, you know, when you're hitting your prime now. So, like, these are going to make mistakes, and I think we sometimes can get called out on the pod, like, you know, by people saying, oh, we're too negative, we're expecting everything from the players. I think we're very, very patient in that front because we kind of understand that process. No one is ever the finished article at 21, 22, unless you're a genetic freak like Messi or Mbappe or, like, you know, well, we took Ronaldo when he was, 25, 26 to really come into his prime. And so it takes time, I think, and patience as well. And I don't think we're overly critical of them. I just think we just want a bit of consistency, but we're in the most inconsistent league in the world. And the teams that are consistent get promoted, or unless you're consistently bad, you get relegated. but in terms of the styles and everything like that, because it's a nice point, this, because when we speak about Tav and the likes of Spence, if he was to come back, Coulson, if he was coming back, and then you've got the, you know, the players like Marcus Brown and stuff like that, it'd be interesting to see what style would suit them probably the best. But when we asked you guys the question on what style of football you would like to see Middlesbrough play, we had a lot of varied answers. I mean, 32% of the answers, I couldn't really make them up because they were so, like, 4-4-2, I just want us to win. So, like, some of those, like, comments were quite hard to use. But I'll give you the top three and four. So possession style was top after that with 25%. 23% was a very, very all-out offensive strategy, which, I mean, can tell people play a lot of FIFA. And then the next one is more of, like, a gen press, where you tend to see that with, like, more of, like, a Klopp side. I think when people say a lot of attack, I think they're looking to try and play a Bielsa ball, where it is very, very press for 90 minutes, very unique style, and I don't think it's much longevity in it, to be honest. I think it's a very, very unique to a specific manager in Bielsa rather than a general style. And then, interestingly, 1.7% were happy with the current style of long ball in the channels. So, Tom, a clear divide from fans regarding styles. So, is it a case of, as long as Borough get more positive results than negative results, people are going to go home happy?
I think that's the case, yeah. I mean, personally, from that, I'd prefer possession. But we saw under Karanka and the promotion side and everything like that, there were people who weren't a fan of that possession style. There were people who were saying, oh, we're passing back and sideways and stuff like that. But we were still winning most weeks and they were going home happy. So I think as long as you do find a style that works, it is going to be fine. Like if we were to win the league with long balls into the channel, I don't think people would mind as much, but it's clearly not effective. Mm. So we need a change in style for sure. And as long as we are winning, I'm sure people would be all right with that. You might have a few grumbles about the style, and you know, if a player dares to pass it backwards at the Riverside, you might kind of hear some grumblings there. But
we're just playing it towards the tees because we can't pass it back.
But you know, as long as we're winning, like, I don't think people would be that bothered.
Turner, do you agree?
I don't know, because whenever this sort of type of question comes up, I think about the Tony Pulis era, and I mean, we were winning games, but there was clear discontent underneath the surface of the style of play. So I think it's dependent on the manager, because if you don't buy into the manager as a manager or as just a person, then I think your patience is going to run incredibly thin. Even when you're maybe picking up results, there's still going to be that snap of, well, if we do lose, we're going to go well in on the criticism. So I don't know. I do think it's dependent on the thoughts and feelings and the relatability towards the manager.
Yeah, I think, does it come down to the manager then? Is it him as a person? Because you could probably play whatever style you wanted, really. And if you won 1-0 every week, but you played, if you had like 2% possession and you scored off that 2% possession, like, would you be happy with that? Because you technically you've won the league, you've kept a million clean sheets. You know, you haven't conceded a goal. You know, you're scoring one goal every week. You technically win the football match. You know, you've got the maximum points ever. Are you happy? No.
I mean, you should be if you've got maximum points, but there will always be in the back of your mind that under surface level criticism almost of the style of play that will, of course, rear its head when the results don't go so well. But to answer the first part of your question of is it about the manager, I do think that the next manager of Borough needs to have some sort of outside affiliation. Well, not outside affiliation, but somebody that can come in and can relate to the area and the values of the people and the values of the town, because that's what Karanka did. He often linked it to the Basque Country and growing up there. And I know Tony Pulis did as well. But
look, I mean, you get a pint of milk from next door. to be fair, though, do you know what I think? That's a very cliche manager thing to do, because Karanka, Basque Country, basket, and he said basket then. You know, Tony Pulis reminds me of Wales. Neil Warnock, he said, well, I know the area really well because of his time at Hartlepool. I mean, don't you think every
might be like in the manager's script for in the start.
Just yeah. He's definitely make sure in Pulis's.
Make no, sure you say this.
I think it was different with Tony Pulis, because I just, that press conference, the whole milk anecdote, just felt like he was talking down the, I don't know, the almost the bad parts of Borough, we're underprivileged, this, that and the other. And with Karanka, because he's an outsider coming in, you know, not even from the country, never mind the area, it felt like he genuinely felt it and that he got it. And he created this togetherness. And I'm not saying that a manager has to sort of relate to the fans and vice versa in order for success. But I do think it goes a long way, because you saw with Gary Monk, everybody seemed to deem him a robot, and I swear he definitely wasn't a human, because the amount of sort of PR cliche sound bites that were coming out of his press conferences were unbelievable, but they just did not get him, and I think he didn't get us. So there's immediately that disconnect there. Mm. And with Karanka, he created this connection, this community. And yeah, it is cliche, but I do think that, and this isn't just exclusive to Borough, but I think that it definitely goes a long way in people buying into an identity and a project and something to really be proud of.
Yeah, it's why on the piece I wrote around like Rebuild 5.0, like fans are probably one of the key elements of a project going really well, because yeah, you can have Gibson and the head of football and Kieran Scott and the manager all singing from the same hymn sheet, the players can sing it, but if the fans aren't willing to give it a chance or patience, and the people can say, oh well, yeah, give him Warnock a chance, well, Neil Warnock's had 70 games to prove it, he's got a worse loss rate than we'll get, and his football the previous weeks hasn't been good, so I mean it's open to criticism. But if the fans aren't officially and really thoroughly bought into a project, I don't think you can get these things off the ground. But I mean, fair play to Karanka, though. I remember when he used to pick grapes in Pally Park and make wine, so
that would be a spectacle.
To be fair, I think with Karanka it was to do with the standards that he had as well. Like, I remember reading in the Gazette quite a lot about it. Like, he made the club, made the team, sorry, clean up any rubbish after some of the friendly matches in Spain. He used to put together, like, really thorough data packs before each match and really study them. Even, like, I'm kind of go for a personal story here, but I was doing some work experience at Real Radio during his second game, and I'm dating myself there because Real Radio no longer exists, so this is how long ago I was working in journalism. But it was his, I went there for his press conference, and he literally held the door open for like the journalists on the way in, and like, was smiling at him and stuff, and like that type of thing, it goes a long way with building a connection. Like, even
hiring for your small business, if you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're building it with the journalists or building it with the fans, and you can kind of see the standards that he has, but you look at, like, say, Strachan, a couple of managers before him, you'd have never got that from him.
Oh, I mean, Strachan hated everyone, though, didn't he? I mean, the players, I used to see the players and Kalinkas and all sorts. but yeah, I get what you mean there, Thomas. It comes down to principles, values, and stuff like that. And so I was listening to a podcast when I was away. It was High Performance, actually, funny enough. And Damien Hughes, who, if you haven't read any of his work, actually, it's really, really good. It's like The Barcelona Way.
This is another John Clark.
No, it's saying a story around like Gregor Townsend from the Scottish rugby manager. And it was, they were getting battered by England at half time. And he's just, rather than like shout at his players and say how useless they are, and basically, like, you know, exactly what Neil Warnock's doing right now, essentially. He didn't say anything. He just said, right, look at the values we bring to the table as a club, what the fan base, what they want. Bring those values and we can go away from this game happy. And then they actually end up drawing the game like 38-38, I think it was, at the end. But what it comes down to, what you were saying there, Tom, is like, if a manager sets the standard and the really high standards from top to bottom, then you tend to see that flood out to the fans as well, and that community, and more of like a culture, a tribe. That's where you'll tend to see these type of things like flourish, really. God, you can tell I did everything on consumer behaviour, kind of, and like psychology. But yeah, you can really see that, and like that real principle of high value. But I think Borough do need to really raise the bar as high as they possibly can, and none of this blame everything else but ourselves. I think that is the worst thing a manager can do. Sometimes, you know, he's protecting his players, but I think sometimes if things aren't going well, accountability first, and then we move from there. I don't think, because I think Karanka did do that at times. mean, Strachan used to say that he used to get pissed and want to neck himself at one point.
Yeah.
But like with Warnock, I think it's anything but him, isn't it? Really?
It is interesting.
I think that's why fans get pissed off.
Yeah, somebody threaded all the Warnock excuses, and not one of them was about him. And there's been many times where I've thought, oh, Warnock's tactics have potentially cost us the game there. And I wouldn't say there's nothing about it. I'm sure if you look back to previous press conferences, post-match press conferences, there will be something. We're very sort of, the lens is very focused on Warnock's deflecting. But what I will sort of add on to what I was saying about the community is that Neil Warnock, a lot of people were with him at one point, but Tony Pulis seems to have created this distrust of what managers say, because Pulis really played the narrative of hoodwinking the fans, I believe, and that he said things to sort of woo them, which was not necessarily what he was thinking or anything like that. He tried to get them on side, rather, not honestly, but dishonestly, I think. And maybe I'm looking into that a little bit too much, yeah. But I think there's a few people that also agree with that, and there's that trigger, really, of what Warnock says as well, where they're not fully bought into it because they just don't really trust it from the Pulis era as well. So, yeah there's what they say and then the sub-narrative, isn't there?
So the next question we had, actually, was can Neil Warnock turn it around, and are you happy with the manager's job put to him? 80% aren't confident that he can turn it around. But then also, when asking, are you happy with Neil Warnock in charge, 63% said no. 22% were meh, is what it is.
The apathy again.
And then 13% were yes. So quite similar statistics, really. So what you were saying there, then, around a lot of people were on board with Neil Warnock, and we were on the train. I mean, horny for Warnie was like, you know, like we were the drivers of that. But like, well, so what's changed then? Why do you think there's fans have slowly kind of just moved away from that the Warnock wheel?
I think because there's been a switch in dynamic of when he came in, our primary objective was to avoid relegation. He did that, and then automatically you're expecting progress. And last season, a lot of frustrations were bubbling under the surface towards the end of the campaign, weren't there, when he played Brit, when he was halfway out, well, he pretty much was out the door. And then there was a certain reluctance to play the youngsters. And then didn't he play Britt or Fletcher? And then we never saw them again. It was that random game where we were looking at the team sheet and we're like, well, what's the point in playing them? Because they're not going to be here. You may as well give someone else an opportunity whilst Puachu Ratpom sat on the bench. So definitely there was frustrations last season. And because we've effectively picked up from where we left off last season, that has reached the surface now. So there's a dynamic change in our ambitions. Our initial ambition when he came in was to stay up. We did that. Fantastic. Now you want to push on. And I don't really see... I'm with that 8% that doesn't think that Neil Warnock can change things around, because we want to see progress. And what we've seen this season, there's been enough games, 11 games, 12 if you count the Blackpool game in the Cup. Just seems like we've stagnated under him.
Do you agree, Tom? Is that why we've seen that decline?
Yeah, I think it's entirely tied into ambitions. Like Dana said, when he first came in, the objective was to stay up. He accomplished that, had instant success, and got quite a lot of people behind him for that. The next season, I would say that we did progress. I think that's just proven from where we finished in the table, albeit it was a very disappointing second half of the season. And then second half of the season, you know, he's going on, telling Johnny Howson, you're going to enjoy next season, and like our sights are much higher and stuff like that. So as a fan listening to that, you would expect progress this season, which just hasn't happened. Like Dan said, we've picked up where we left off, essentially. I thought the game against Bristol City and Fulham as well was quite promising. You know, Fulham, we looked defensively sound. Bristol City, we looked all right. You know, we had people like, you know, Crooks and Uche, who are such a difference to Britton Fletcher last year. You could see Uche is absolutely giving everything. Crooks was looking good. And then since then, it's been pretty dire, to be honest. And I think I said last week, like our problems lie in defence. when Warnock came in, that was one of the positives. He did make us quite structurally sound at the back. And now it just seems like we're not good at defending or creating chances. I appreciate that has changed in the last couple of games, but the defence hasn't. Mm. So I can see why people are kind of falling off now, because our ambition this year should have been much higher, and we're not looking like we're going to get anywhere near that. And instead of progress, we look like we're going to go backwards this season.
So do you think that, with that in mind then, because you said quite a lot of me there, so I was trying to piece it together, but do you think Neil Warnock is a victim of his own success then, and his own comments? Because he said to Howson last year that you're going to enjoy this season. Statistically, Neil Warnock does very, very well in the second and third season. He gets teams up. So is that why that negativity started to spiral? Because the expectation is so high right now, because people want to get promoted.
I think it is, and he's the one who's got the expectations that high. Obviously, I made my prediction at the start of the year kind of based on his comments and some of the signings we were making. Thought, right, we've built a team which is his now. He should be happy with that. And we should be going for the target he's set, and we're just not anywhere near it.
Yeah, well, 13% who want him to stay, they pretty much all said when they were given the opportunity, they said his experience will turn things around. He just needs more time. The squad's still gelling. So, Tom, do you think that we should give him time then? Because history can teach us that he has got teams out of the division. Yes, it's a slow start, but he can turn it around if it does matter.
I think if we give him more time, it has to be a very limited time period. Against Peterborough next week, that has to be a much changed display from the team. And we need to see some positives from that, and we need to carry that into future games as well. We can't be beating Peterborough comfortably and then losing our next one, as has been the pattern since, you know, ever since the season started. I think we've got another international break in a month. That's probably the time to judge it, I'd say. I know a few weeks ago I kind of said it was this one. probably acting a little bit too emotionally there. Absolutely fuming after some of the performances that we had. But I think if you're looking at it kind of over the course of a whole season, wanting to make progress and potentially wanting to bring a new manager in to help with that progress, they need the time to do it. And, you know, November's probably a good time to switch if we're not seeing signs that things are improving.
Yeah, I agree with that. But so like with the Peterborough game, then, you said we're there, that's a massive game. Given that Borough have got a history of sacking managers, and we said it on a previous podcast around like the 18th to the 21st, we've sacked, what, Mowbray, Strachan, Southgate, and I'm missing one.
I think that was it for recent history. Because Karanka went March, Monk went December.
I'll have to look at my podcast notes. But we'll put the tweet out anyway. But yeah, given that Borough got a history of sacking managers between 18th and 21st, Borough player Peterborough on the 16th of October, history repeats itself, of course. It's a massive game for him. Do we have to win, really?
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. You know, just based on that COVID season where, you know, we had the massive break and then would get one game after the break and got sacked. It wouldn't surprise me if we've just had this international break. We have one game back and then Warnock's gone. But I do think it is a big game. And obviously we've got Barnsley on the Tuesday as well, which is the 20th, right before sacking day. So, you know, it could potentially be a big couple of games. And it always kind of makes me think that about that time period always being when we're sacking managers. I wonder if it's some kind of like internal review around that time. And just like, right, if we're way off the pace by 21st of October, then it's the time to switch. I think it's interesting. Like, I'd love to know that, but I don't know. It's just interesting to look at, isn't it?
Which is so predictable. Dana, we know the Championship, look, it can turn its head in a matter of games. Tom said there, we've got Peterborough and Barnsley, 6 points from six. Possible six could really change the way the table looks. But if you were Steve Gibson, how many games are you thinking before you would make the change? What would you have to see if you're the chairman now to really change things? I mean, if you're chairman now, you probably have got rid of him by now. But I mean,
if you were
Gibson, you know, he does give managers as much opportunity as he can. But what would you do?
Yeah, I mean, Tom mentioned there about the, well, this current international break. I still think that his future should have been, there should have been some sort of resolution with his future this international window, but you're probably looking at November at the latest, because you don't really want to be in a situation where the manager's coming in and it's panic stations trying to sort out his options, and then going into the January transfer window not knowing what is needed, and then potentially having a situation where you've got the people above making the transfer decisions with barely any input from the manager. I mean, I don't think that would happen, but we have seen it in the past where there's been players brought in that don't necessarily suit the style of play of the manager. I'm thinking Jordan Rhodes and Aitor Karanka, for example, when he wanted Ross McCormack. So you don't want that situation. But I don't know what they will be thinking behind the scenes, because they're a little bit outside of the bubble that we're in. Of course, they're mostly invested because Steve Gibson's a fan, but I reckon he'll be sort of relaxed about it, and he probably won't be panicking.
Yeah, you're not going to get relegated, are you? Well,
yeah.
I mean...
Well, yeah, don't say that.
Touch wood.
Well, look, it doesn't look like we'll get relegated, but I can definitely see why Gibson would be relaxed about it. You know, he's got an experienced head there. Like, he knows the league inside out, so you're going to be in and around it. But when we asked the Borough fans themselves around the predictions in the poll where Mills might finish this season, they've definitely changed. So like 71% of our respondents are now settling for 10th to 16th. There is some people I think we will get relegated, but...
Oh, God.
Tom, mid-table, you said, is now like the bit where fans want. You said you want a promotion. Has your feelings changed at all? Do you think that mid-table is now the most realistic goal Borough can probably achieve?
Yeah, I think mid to kind of lower upper table, in between like 7th and 10th. I think my best case scenario at the moment is we are the team that comes out of absolutely nowhere to finish 6th. that'd be a positive, because they tend to do all right in the playoffs. They ride a wave of momentum, but... Yeah, really disappointed with the start of the season. Again, going off what was said all the way leading up to this season, and what should have been the target. I think that's probably around best case scenario for us now.
Well, on average, if you look at Middlesbrough's data for like the last 10, 11 years in the Championship, obviously by the one we won the Premier League, we average 11th at the end of in terms of
We love a 1-1, don't we?
We do love, because statistically our games would be 1-1 if we were to do an average goal every season and defend. See, I love the data, don't I? So you're only 3 points off 11th. So I mean, we're just below our current averages as a club. So Dan, I think you said 8th, didn't you?
I said 7th because I checked it earlier on. I said 7th in a final day drama where Borough miss out.
Okay, so. Are you going to follow the crowd now and say mid-table? Because I think we both were like mid-table-ish. Tom was really keen on promotion.
Tom was definitely the most optimistic one, wasn't he?
I want us to win everything.
I would say sort of based off the start of the season, I just think there's so many teams that are better equipped than us. I mean, you see Stoke, I mean, Coventry, they're doing fantastically well as well. I just can't. I mean, Blackburn, they've got Broughton Diaz, who seems to be a revelation this season, now that he's Chilean, but there's just so many better teams than us. I mean, I can't remember the league table as it stands. I haven't really looked at it, to be honest. But the teams that are above us, a lot of them, are just better off than us. I think they're better in terms of their collective quality. They might not have individuals on paper that are better than ours, and that this isn't me saying that we've got the best team in the league, but I certainly think that we've got a good squad. I can't really see us. I can see us being in and around the top six, and I did think that we'd start this season well and then derail and tail off towards the latter half like we did last season, but it's been not the opposite, because obviously I'm not looking at this from the end of the season perspective, but we definitely haven't started the season well, and that's a surprise to me, because I did expect us to.
So how do you think we can get to the objective that we want to then? Is it the only change? The only change we can make is probably the manager that could do that for us, or do you think we can do something else to maybe get there?
Well, I mean, we've all been quite vocal about our thoughts about Neil Warnock's future. And you see Forest now under Steve Cooper, they've had that new manager bounce, and that might just be what we need, to be honest. A big change that is the first falling domino of more change and better change. And I will reiterate, I just can't see Borough improving under Warnock, and I feel like we have hit a dead end. So for me, change of manager would probably be beneficial. That maybe suits this team more and this squad more and the options that we have. But I can't see Warnock being sacked, if I'm being honest.
All the way through?
Yeah, unless it's very bad in that we're just above the relegation zone in maybe January or something. I can't really see it.
Okay, Tom?
I think if we're going to kind of give him the benefit of the doubt, him and the coaching team could kind of sit down, look at the style of play, look at what's going wrong, and coach that into the players and just, like, coaches to actually be better. Failing that, because I don't feel like that's going to happen, I think it is going to be like a fresh pair of eyes, new ideas on the team, someone who's going to utilise the midfield kind of manager change.
You know what it sort of feels like to me? It's like we're moving forwards, but with our face screwed on backwards. Because
we're walking backwards.
No, we're walking forwards, but we're looking backwards. So you've got Neil Warnock there that is not going to... I mean, realistically, he's probably not going to stay beyond this season. So you've got a manager there that there's a definite crossover in the signings that have been brought in, the Lesalikis, Pierre Esparaz, that don't appear to be, on paper anyway, Warnock signings. You've got the Matt Crooks, the Uchik Piezu, Sol Bamba, Lee Peltier. They're definitely Warnock signings. You cannot dispute that. But it does feel as though we're sort of stuck in this situation, a bit of a crossroads, really, what I mentioned on the outro of last week's podcast, where we've got Warnock and this is probably going to be his final season in management. I know he said that back in 2009, but still, I think realistically, it's going to be his final season. And you don't... I guess Steve Gibson, in an ideal world, probably doesn't want to cut that swan song off, really, you know, his final season in management. So, yeah, it does feel like we are walking forwards with our face on backwards. Mm. And the face being Warnock.
He's a sentimental man, is Steve Gibson. Well, let's talk about managers then, because one of the questions was, if Neil Warnock was to be replaced, who would like to see in the hot seat? Right at the top was Eddie Howe with 33% of the vote, then Wilder, not Deontay Wilder, Chris Wilder.
I mean, Deontay Wilder needs something to do now.
Boxing job, you know. With 10.9% of the vote. Former Chelsea boss Frank Lampard was third, then Alex Neil, and then some notable mentions for former boss Aitor Karanka, Ryan Law, who is currently at Plymouth and doing very, very well there. Speaking to one of the guys who supports Plymouth at work, and he's petrified of them losing him. So we've also got Roy Keane on there.
That one was interesting.
And Graham Souness as assistant.
Micah Richards as assistant.
Probably not on there. Then we've got Isco, who was just being sacked from Watford. And then a lovely, notable mention. I had to check this whole person's, like, well, three people, actually.
Three people, said
three
Steve
people.
Bruce.
Oh, you've ruined
it. Oh, sorry. Sorry.
So Steve Bruce had three votes, and there were very respectable answers throughout. And there were, one of them was like, I want to change the style, but I want Steve Bruce in charge. I was like, what? So if we roll our sleeves up a lot, we'll get Steve Bruce. absolutely ruined that.
Sorry.
Yeah, Steve, that was, Steve Agnew dream team.
He was really trying to drum up that suspense there, wasn't he? And I just swooped in. I was the David Nugent on the goal line stealing his glory there.
Do you know what it's like, John? Have you seen the other guys, Tom Weg goes, Arnold Schwarzenegger. The Austrian man with a dream. Arnold Schwarzenegger.
You've ruined this.
You've ruined the story.
This is me sat here not knowing what you're on about.
You need to watch the other guys, it's so good. But realistically, right, can you see Borough getting Eddie Howe or Frank Lampard as boss, or even Steve Bruce? Tom, do you want to go first?
Come on, what's your cracking up here?
Bruce? Steve Bruce?
Right, Eddie Howe, I don't think we have any chance, but I'd be absolutely blown away if we got Eddie Howe.
Bruce?
I'm going to turn his mic off.
Right. So yeah, I don't think we've got any chance of anyhow.
You know what it feels like? Sorry, you know what it feels like? You know that X Factor episode where Louis and Sharon are absolutely cracking up and Simon tells them to get out of the room and then Sharon whacks her the face off the door?
Steve Bruce? What's in your coffee cup? Are you pissed?
Oh, I wish I was. I don't know why, it just probably got me. Sorry.
Let's hope those three people aren't listening to this.
Fucking Steve Bruce.
Carry on, Tom. Hold the fort, right. Please.
Deontay Wilder, number two. Right, we're not. I don't think I'd like to see him as Borough manager. Obviously, I'm talking about Chris Wilder there, not Deontay. But wouldn't want to see either of them as Borough manager.
Interesting.
Lampard, that'd be an interesting one. I feel like he does well with a young squad.
That's so unrealistic, though.
Really?
But I think really? he's going to be holding out for a Premier League / top tier job.
Look at that, right?
He's fifth. That's the job at the minute. Him and Southgate, which is us.
Gerrard, isn't it?
Gerrard, no. Oh God, competing not just for players, but now managers.
Yeah,
jobs.
Of course.
I look at Frank Lampard, though. I look at Frank Lampard, though, and obviously he got Derby to the playoffs, didn't he?
He did.
But then what else has he done? As I mentioned before, when I mentioned Frank Lampard is a name that has been mentioned, I said that he's probably unrealistic off the back of his name, not off the back of what he's done in management. Of course, fantastic player, glittering career. But as a manager, playoff place, and then out of his depth at Chelsea.
FA Cup finalist, got in the top four without spending a penny.
I would expect that with that squad. Mm.
Took Chelsea backwards after he had spent a penny, didn't he?
He did, technically, yeah. I mean, look at Tuchel now. He's doing an absolutely fantastic job, isn't he? But, I mean, I can't see Lampard dropping back down now after you're managing such a prestige club in Chelsea. Mm. In comparison, you wouldn't go from Chelsea to Borough, would you?
It would be quite the career jump. Like Mendieta going from Barcelona to Borough.
Ravanelli scored a Champions League winning goal and then signed for Middlesbrough.
So you're saying you want Ravanelli as our next manager?
He's definitely going to put his name in the ring for it.
Oh, absolutely.
He always creeps up, doesn't he? Like, pops up at one point, doesn't he, Ravanelli?
He does.
I'd love to manage Middlesbrough one day. Go on, Tom.
Number four was Alex Neil. And to be honest, he's probably a manager I've always thought, you know, like I'd like to see him managing us at one point. I thought he did a good job with Norwich. And
good job at Preston too.
Yeah.
No budget at all.
Yeah.
I thought he made both teams kind of very solid and hard to beat, but also kind of good going forwards. I wouldn't mind seeing him as Borough manager. And then in the notable mentions, Ryan Law is obviously mentioned quite a lot on the podcast.
Timing.
I've heard a couple of people at work this week actually talking about Ryan Law, and similar to what you've said, they've got mates who support Plymouth who absolutely don't want him to leave. I'm not as familiar with his work as that, but I'll probably look into it a bit more. As
do play some really good stuff, Plymouth, like really, really good. 3-5-2 attacking fullbacks or wingbacks. So I mean, when you look at the likes of, it'd been hilarious that we've got rid of Spence now, but he would have been probably perfect in that position. Mm-hmm. But
and then looking at the other ones, Karanka. I mean, I'd love to see it if he was like the same as when he first came in, but I don't think that's ever going to happen. I think he's burned his bridges.
Nope.
Roy Keane would be hilarious, especially if, like we say, we had Souness or Micah Richards as his assistant, but also never going to happen. Sisko, don't know. I mean, he was Watford manager for however long.
Ten
games or whatever when Watford usually sack the managers. Obviously, Steve Bruce, no chance.
No chance, but next thing you know, he's our manager.
Oh, if he
you
is,
watch,
honestly.
It'll happen.
Be him or Mark Hughes.
Or Pardew.
Gary Megson.
Yeah.
Gary Megson.
I wonder what Alan Kirby's doing.
I was going to say, I wonder what Gary Megson's doing nowadays.
I was going to say, it was the other one from Bolton. It was Sammy Lee, I'm thinking of.
Sammy
absolutely
Lee.
Not.
Fat Sam, you know, he's out of work at the minute.
No.
I mean, we're going down the route anyway, really, aren't we? I mean, Tony Pulis and Neil Warnock back to back.
Collection of the hardest Brexit managers you can get.
Oh, yeah. We're going down that
spiral now. But Dana, who would you like to see?
Well, you know it's Ryan Law. Yeah,
Steve Bruce.
Top, no, he's top of League One at the moment with Plymouth. he seems to have sorted their defence out, because last season they were a very attack-minded team, but their defence was incredibly leaky. But I just feel like he links well to the style of play that Borough fans want, that front foot action, letting the players express themselves, the defenders right to the forwards as well. And I think he's due a championship move after this season. If he progresses Plymouth how he is at the moment and he keeps up this fantastic start, he's definitely going to be a championship manager very, very soon. And I just feel like he's one of those managers that we really should be looking at, because I know that there's a difference in what we play currently in a sort of 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1, and Ryan Law plays with wing-backs, but why not transition over to wing-backs? We had our best spell last season and our best success with wing-backs, and I appreciate that since we brought in wingers. But hey, why not go bold and go with a manager that plays a different formation and a different style? Yes, it's going to take time, but he's bought into this identity and a community, and everyone's on the same page at Plymouth, it seems. And I know we played them pre-season. I think they look good in that game, sorry. And they seem to be a very forward-thinking, progressive club even. And I know this sounds ridiculous, but they were trialling a new match day service, streaming service for that Borough friendly, weren't they? And I just think that looking into Plymouth, and I was looking at the comments of their YouTube highlight videos the other day, it just seems like everyone's on the same page, and that is invaluable, really, to a long-term direction, which is what Borough need. Plus, he's getting the results as well.
Yeah, I mean, that really does help. But there is some notable mentions as well, which I didn't mention, but Hasselbank got a couple of mentions there.
One.
Michael Reisiger. Also, Daniel Farker, if he was to leave. John Terry is
God,
one.
No, absolutely not.
Hans Wolf is one. I'm trying to scroll through, because there's quite a lot of others who got like one vote, but it probably wasn't worth putting in the mixer. Diego Martinez, Jordy Morris, anyone? No. Okay.
That would be an interesting one. But where is he?
He's not coach up anywhere.
Has he not?
Nope.
He was with Lampard, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
At Chelsea.
And then there's another one we're bound, Gareth Ainsworth as well. But in terms of managers, God, he could pick anyone, I think. Obviously, my personal preference, Mark Robins at Coventry. But if I wasn't to get him, I would probably go Alex Neil. Is probably next.
You're not aboard the Ryan Lowe hype train.
I am, but I just think I don't think we'd be able to get him. Like, why would you?
True. Yeah, it is true. If Plymouth don't get promoted, he surely is due a championship move. He did incredibly well with Bury. I think he got them promoted. And he's doing really well with Plymouth as well. And funnily enough, Neil Warnock was at the Plymouth game the other day. I mean, I'm not going to look into that, because, of course, he's based down Cornwall, isn't he? But hopefully he'll be looking at Ryan Lowe's style of play and just giving Kieran Scott a nudge and being like, yeah, there we go.
Sorry, Ryan, you're not playing enough long balls there. All right, guys, that's it. So thank you very much for joining me again. It was nice for us to all be together as a happy family once again. And everyone, and I want to say thank you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thank you to everyone who filled in the survey and has been listening to this podcast. We're one podcast away from 150 episodes, so thank you very much for listening to us and always engage with us. So this has been the Borough Breakdown podcast, and that was all your match day chatter in a pod. Up the Borough Breakdown.